Blog Talk Radio.
Well, there's news. There's sketchy, questionable news and reporting, and then there's very, very fake news, and that seems to be CNN's forte. A huge blow up in one of the meetings yesterday, one of these information gathering sessions at the White House, and Ms. Huckabee was attacked with a fury. So I'll just play that clip for you here. I was so entertained by this. The reporter, in my opinion, couldn't have gotten it more wrong. If you're pumping out fake news, you can't then complain about the quality of everybody else's stuff. But anyway, good morning. 29th of June. June's almost done, my friends. So I'll come back with a few headlines for you. But right now, we got to get into this Huckabee brouhaha. And I like Huckabee. I think she comes up with good answers. CNN is now warning it's getting dangerous for reporters. And now they're saying that the president, Trump, could cause physical attacks against reporters, which I find absolutely hilarious after a sitting House member is shot on second base. And to a great extent, I think you could put that at the feet of the lamestream media and all of the other idiots that are gathering together. I mentioned this before, but it bears repeating. You know when a genius has arrived when they're surrounded by a confederacy of dunces, which is what appears to be the Democratic Party and the mainstream media. That is from Jonathan Swift, which gave rise to a very, very popular book, very wonderful book called A Confederacy of Dunces, if you can ever get your hands on that. Well, my clips are still loading, so let me read you a few stories. U.S. setting guidelines for revised travel ban, of course. McConnell trying to revise Senate health care bill by Friday. Top Catholic in Australia charged with pedophilia. I assume it's gay pedophilia or with boys, but I guess you have to find out to read the case. But I did some research and found out that virtually all victims of Catholic pedophilia are boys. And Cardinal, the top cardinal in Australia and the number three member of the Vatican team, he would be the top ranked official in history to ever be prosecuted. And the others that were accused were basically protected by the Vatican. They never had to face their charges since the Vatican is its own city, its own state, and apparently its own gender. 6:10, here is the Deputy White House Secretary. President is right and everybody out here is fake news. I think you got it right there. Here, check it out.
Recently, Breitbart News challenged the accuracy of the CNN story, and afterwards it was retracted, deleted, and the editors responsible were fired, as well as the network apologized for the story. One of the targets of the story accepts the apology. The president went on Twitter this morning and repeated that CNN was fake news. Why isn't their response good enough for the president?
I don't know that it's that the response isn't good enough for the president. I think it's the constant barrage of fake news directed at this president probably that has garnered a lot of his frustration. You point to that report. There are multiple other instances where that outlet that you referenced has been repeatedly wrong and had to point that out or be corrected. There's a video circulating now, whether it's accurate or not. I don't know, but I would encourage everybody in this room and frankly, everybody across the country to take a look at it. I think if it is accurate, I think it's a disgrace to all of media, to all of journalism. I think that we have gone to a place where if the media can't be trusted to report the news, then that's a dangerous place for America. And I think if that is the place that certain outlets are going, particularly for the purpose of spiking ratings, and if that's coming directly from the top, I think that's even more scary and certainly more disgraceful. And I hope that that's not the direction we're headed. I hope that outlets that have continued to use either unnamed sources, sometimes stories with no sources at all. We've been going on this Russia-Trump hoax for the better part of a year now with no evidence of anything. Things like the success at the VA barely get covered. They may get covered for an hour at a time, but this story gets covered day in, day out. And I think America is frankly looking for something better. They're looking for something more. And I think they deserve something better from our news media.
Does the president actually expect us not to report on stories of a foreign country trying to influence the presidential election?
I don't think it's that it's expected that you're not to report on, again, actual news if there's something there. But again, I think that there are a lot of things happening in this world that, frankly, a lot of people would like to hear about, whether it's job growth, whether it's deregulation, whether it's tax reform, health care. I think a lot of those things deserve a lot more coverage than they get. And all we're saying is, you know, I think that we should take a really good look at what we are focused on, what we are covering, and making sure that it's actually accurate and it's honest. If we make the slightest mistake, the slightest word is off, it is just an absolute tirade from a lot of people in this room. But news outlets get to go on day after day and cite unnamed sources, use stories without sources, have, you know, you mentioned the Scaramucci story where they had to have reporters resign.
Come on. You're inflaming everybody right here, right now with those words. This administration has done that as well. Why in the name of heavens? Any one of us, right, are replaceable. And any one of us, if we don't get it right, the audience has the opportunity to turn the channel or not read us.
I think you have
been elected to serve for 4 years at least. There's no option other than that. We're here to ask you questions.
Right.
We're here to provide the answers. And what you just did is inflammatory to people all over the country who look at it and say, see, once again, the president is right and everybody else out here is fake media. And everybody in this room is only trying to do their job.
Well, I disagree completely. First of all, I think if anything has been inflamed, it's the dishonesty that often takes place by the news media. And I think it is outrageous for you to accuse me of inflaming a story when I was simply trying to respond to his question. Kevin.
Thank you, Sarah. I just rapid fire.
All right. So that is the daughter of Mike Huckabee, and I think she's pretty good at the job. That kind of puts the cat amongst the pigeons, as they say, the two sides. The one side saying we get to report on anything that's news. Even if it's fake, if it's in the news cycle, then we have the right or the privilege to report on it. I think the one guy was saying, without really addressing whether it was fake news, this stuff is out there, why can't we report on it? And her response is, why don't you report on something besides Russia? And then the other guy gets up and says, this is an outrage. You're inflaming things. And this guy gets interviewed later, and I don't have any sympathy for this guy. Anybody who has an unbiased view, which I would assume means that you have to be outside of the media, knows that there's been a lot of fake stuff that's been put out there against Trump. But in addition to that, there has been an extraordinary and unprecedented level of assault against him in the media, and it's time for it to end. It doesn't serve any positive purpose. You know, they're just trying to poison the water for anybody who's in the GOP, for Trump, for any of his ideas, for any of the people that work for him. And it is destroying the Democratic Party. It's going to destroy CNN, and the mainstream media doesn't realize, or maybe doesn't care. They are getting atomized. They're getting torn apart. They've been exposed. 616 Kelly O'Connell, America here, Ventura Highway. We'll be right back. 523-1450 and 805-6180 for your text machine.
Walking down the road, tell me how long you gonna stay here, Joe.
6:23. Kelly here. Good to hang out with you this morning. Jeff Bridges says he's rooting for Trump. There is something about Trump that I like. And the thing that I like about him is it seems like he cares. And it seems like the discipline of being a businessman has showed him how to have a focus. And I think that you're going to find a lot of Americans, whether they admit it to their friends or not, are starting to maybe not fall in love with the guy. He's got a lot of rough edges, but starting to have some respect for him and to see that he appears to be trying to make the country a better place, and not in the way that Obama did. I believe Obama tried to build something new in America by destroying it first, or heading in that direction. And unfortunately, Obama was not a very capable leader. So although he did do a lot of damage, there was a lot of contradiction within his personality, within his activities. And so I don't know if Obama enjoyed being president. I assume that he enjoyed the power, but no matter how you take him, if you take him as being a real patriot, Obama, that is, if you take him as being a sincere person, he seemed to be lost in executing that. On the contrary, I think it's much easier to make an argument that he didn't like America and thought we needed to be taken down a few pegs and socialized, and then given socialism, and then stuck in line with all the other countries. A lot of contradictory, nonsensical ideas that Obama stood for. And now he's infuriating the left by taking this massive billionaire-style vacation after being in office. In the meantime, more on CNN from Fox, of course.
Today, another scandal for CNN. Today, Project Veritas, a conservative investigative group, released a video of prominent CNN left-wing contributor Van Jones apparently downplaying the significance of the Russia investigation. Fox News hasn't verified the authenticity of the video, but a man who appears to be Van Jones is heard saying, quote, "The Russia thing is just a big nothing burger." The video was released just a day after Project Veritas put out a separate undercover video of CNN health producer John Bonnefeld calling the Russia story BS. This, despite the network's nearly nonstop coverage of the investigation into possible collusion between the Russians and then candidate Trump's campaign. And that's not all. Yesterday, we told you how three CNN journalists resigned over a retracted article that said a Trump advisor was under investigation for ties to a Russian investment fund. The New York Post is reporting that CNN only retracted the article after it was threatened with legal action. Take a listen to how radio talk show host Rush Limbaugh is reacting.
Could Donald Trump be the end of CNN? What a legacy that would be.
I think that's what the Trump administration is doing with many in the media. They're like cats. He's got this little red laser light, and it's just causing them to make fools of themselves, and everybody's laughing at them as they're crashing into walls and sofa in the floor. And that's what little Jim Acosta had happen to him yesterday.
All right. So the news, the developments, yet another layer to the CNN problem, the network under siege. Greg, your thoughts?
Well, let's take another one here. And here's from, let's play a little bit from Hannity, collapse of the liberal media. I think that's what you're seeing is a collapse of the credibility of the media. And you see, as it's coming apart at the seams, you see a lot of these personalities who are obviously into their own legend, into their own myth, and the various talking heads out there, and they are really exposing personal bias. It's personal with them, and that's why they get frustrated, and it's very unprofessional. They're personally getting involved in the news because they see themselves as the news. They are the white knight that's coming to kill the baby Hitler, and it's all going very wrong for him. But here's Hannity.
History is literally happening right in front of our eyes. We have the liberal destroy Trump. Mainstream media is now in a free fall and on the brink of complete and total collapse. That's not an overstatement. It's not hyperbole. Now, these propagandists and champions of fake news continue to be exposed day after day, and CNN is leading the way. Now, I'm going to share my advice for the head of CNN, their chief of fake news and propaganda news, Jeff Zucker, in just a minute. Jeff, I'm trying to save your career. But first, let me explain how one of the biggest anti-Trump networks has lost all their credibility and can no longer be trusted by you, the American people. Now, at this point, we should put CNN 6 feet, you see right there, underground for repeatedly spreading lies, propaganda, black helicopter, tinfoil hat conspiracy theories, and for viciously trying to take down this president. Now, let's just look at some of the network's many controversies and scandals they've had there. There's the image of CNN's former New Year's Eve co-host. Really, it's so graphic. Every time we show you, we have to put a warning on the screen. Kathy Griffin, posing like an ISIS fighter. Look at how despicable that is, with a bloody, severed head of a Trump lookalike. Pretty disgusting. And after that vile photo shoot, CNN then fired Griffin. Fair enough. And then earlier this month, CNN cut ties. Remember Reza Aslan? That's the unhinged liberal responsible for disturbing tweets like this one, quote, "This POS, you know what it is not just an embarrassment to America and a stain on the presidency. He's an embarrassment to humankind." Oh, that's fair and balanced. Now, kicking unhinged liberal host to the curb is just the beginning of CNN's massive credibility crisis. CNN has been routinely humiliated for pushing their fake news. Remember, earlier this week, three so-called journalists allegedly resigned, I don't believe that, after the outlet had to retract a completely made-up story about a Trump ally, a friend of mine, Anthony Scaramucci, which claimed that Anthony was being investigated for colluding with the Russians through dealings with a Russian investment fund. You know, CNN and the rest of the Destroy Trump media, they have tried to play it off, oh, it's just an honest mistake, and say that CNN did the right thing. They retracted the story. But according to an explosive report in the New York Post, it appears that CNN may have been forced to correct the fake news hit piece. Take a look at this headline. CNN faced a $100 million lawsuit over botched Russia story. Now, according to the Post, CNN quickly retracted the story. Why? Anthony Scaramucci threatened a massive libel lawsuit. Now, of course, that example is not the only time CNN has gotten the story completely wrong. Let's go back. Let's stay right here in the month of June.
All right, let's take a little break here and then come back and get this list of screw-ups. So what's going to happen to CNN 523-1450-805-6180? Are they going to go legs up, so to speak? Do you think a network could be destroyed just from something as simple as repeatedly putting out fake stories and then having the anchors outraged and fuming on TV and demanding answers from the White House and saying we're not going to get bullied anymore? Just, this is side-splitting, to be honest. 631, 632, Kelly O'Connell. We'll be right back. Got some weather for you, too.
Some people say This town don't look good in snow. You don't care, I know.
Well, I'm gonna switch gears here and get into Mark Stein on a credibility crisis at CNN. Russian scandal has no actual Russians involved with it.
Mark Stein is an author and a columnist. He's watched all of this pretty carefully, and he joins us now. What do you think of that, Mark? The whole "our viewers are terrible, consumers are bad if they don't like us" argument. Is that a winner?
No, it's not. And the idea of converting yourself into a victim group of journalist Americans, the latest hyphenated victim group, that is really going to work. And I think the problem is, to extend your potato chips analogy, is they're actually selling a bag that has all the packaging of potato chips, and there are no potato chips inside. That's the problem with the Russia story. They went bananas over that Malaysian plane that disappeared a couple of years ago. But at least there was a Malaysian plane that was here 1 minute and wasn't there the next. Here, there actually is no Malaysian plane, and they're covering it. I mean, you said Jeff Zucker is telling them to stop covering real news. You're not entirely accurate on that, Tucker. Yesterday, they interviewed Elmo about what he thought of Syrian refugees. And oddly enough, Elmo happens to like them. And that actually was the least nutty thing CNN has done in the last few weeks. It's the nearest thing to real news.
It's sad. I mean, there are actually a lot of talented people over there. I work there. I know a bunch of them. They're smart, serious people, but they're being pushed to the side in favor of this garbage. What about the prediction you heard Rush Limbaugh, who you sit in for sometimes, say that they're going to be a casualty of the Trump administration?
Yes, I think that's likely, because the argument that Van Jones was saying, that it's a nothing burger but it's ratings, that's true in the short term. But there are diminishing returns to this, which is that it's a Russian investigation with no Russians. The only Russian anyone ever mentions is the ambassador, who's like strolling around lunching all over the District of Columbia. He's the only sinister Russian in this story. It's a Russian investigation without any Russians. And at some point, it's going to be like one of those Russian dolls that all the tourists like. You open the big Russian doll, there's a smaller Russian doll, there's a teensy-weensy Russian doll, and then you open up the last Russian doll, and there's nothing. And at some point, which I think actually the bulk of the American public have figured out already, there is actually nothing. We're down to the last minuscule Russian doll, and there's nothing inside when you open that up.
So you think that that's a critique of CNN, but I think CNN would call that hate speech. Do you think it should be allowed to – I mean, do you think you're making them feel unsafe by criticizing them?
Well, they actually are advancing the argument now that Trump pushing back against the media, which nobody likes. Nobody likes. Everybody – and I say this as someone in the media, and you're in the media, and you know that. People hate the media. Everybody hates the media.
That's true.
And they hate Jim Acosta going bananas at the White House press conference because the big mean press secretary won't let him turn his camera on. I'm in favor, by the way. I thought Elmo was excellent on CNN yesterday. I'm in favor of replacing Jim Acosta with Elmo at the White House press conference. The fact is, the public is on the White House's side. If Sean Spicer wants to conduct his press conference in interpretative dance, he can do that. And the public, by and large, if it's a choice between Sean Spicer announcing the Obamacare bill in interpretative dance or Jim Acosta doing his drama queenery, then people would rather have the interpretative dance of Sean Spicer. They're not going to go anywhere with this.
I think, though, the idea, and look, I'm not in charge over there, but the idea is you identify a relatively small but consistent audience of true believers who were sort of, you know, read into the esoteric theory of Freemasonry or Russia conspiracy or whatever they're selling, and you kind of just go with them. You're no longer a national network. You're speaking to a small group.
Yes, and they're very enthusiastic. The trouble, I think the serious point here, though, is that at some point the interests of the Democrat Party diverge from CNN and the other Russia investigation obsessives. Because every time they actually succeed in dragging someone into Congress to talk about it, what happens is it reveals more about Loretta Lynch meeting with Bill Clinton or telling Jim Comey not to call the Hillary investigation an investigation.
All right, so it's the boomerang effect. The more that the left demands investigations, the more this crazy reaction happens where we find out that Obama was up to his neck in the Russia hack and all the other stuff that was going on. So here we go. 639 and 523 1450 Kelly O'Connell will take a little segue right here and be right back.
Venture a highway in the sunshine, where the days are longer, the nights are stronger than moonshine. You're gonna go, I know. Cause the free wind is blowing through.
In case you're on pins and needles to dying to find out what Elmo said on CNN, check it out.
An extremely exciting Facebook Live here for you now. We're talking about an amazing project that is bringing the wonders of Sesame Street to refugees in different war-torn.
So there are three people, a woman that's talking right now on the left, in the middle is a guy, and then another woman to the right, and then to the right of her, Elmo, sitting there, nodding very enthusiastically.
Places across the world. And we have some really exciting guests with us. Facebook users, you will want to be asking questions. Start putting them in the comments section. Let me introduce our guests. We have David Miliband, who is, of course, the CEO of the IRC, the International Rescue Committee, who have teamed up with Sesame Street in this venture. We have Sherry Weston, who is the head of global impact for the Sesame Workshop. And last but not least, I have to say this is a real treat. I get to interview lots of exciting people. But Elmo, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, but thank you for having me, Elmo. Hi, everybody.
Elmo, can I just start by asking you, because I know you went to visit a refugee camp in Jordan, right,
yes.
Back in February?
Yes.
What was it like?
It was really wonderful. Oh, Elmo and Miss Sherry went to Jordan together.
We did.
And it was
really
wonderful because Elmo got to meet a lot of new friends.
A lot of new friends. And did you find that the Syrian little girls and little boys were a lot like your friends here in America?
Yeah, they really were. It was very interesting because they like to play and learn,
right.
Just like Elmo and all of his friends at Sesame Street.
And they loved Elmo. They loved meeting Elmo.
It was a really good time.
Well, you're pretty lovable, Elmo. I mean, Sherry, tell us a little bit more about this project. Why is this important, and what are you trying to do here?
Well, Sesame's had a long history at looking at issues from a child's perspective. And given the staggering number of children who are displaced today, we knew this was an area where we really had to try to do something to help. And we knew we couldn't do it alone. I mean, we are great at reaching children with quality early educational content. We know how many of these children have left behind any opportunity for early education. So that led us to the IRC. Because after a lot of sort of due diligence and talking to a number of great organizations who work in this space, we really determined that the IRC was the ideal complement to Sesame, given their experience, their infrastructure, their focus on education as well.
This is absolutely surreal with this stupid puppet sitting there looking, staring at her.
Help us reach these children, and we could help create engaging.
Is Elmo a male? If it's a female, then they should have a veil on it.
Just a reminder to our Facebook users who are watching this live, start sending in your questions. David, tell us, what was your response when you first heard about this idea from Sesame Street, and what is the importance when you're looking at this larger picture of this catastrophe with displacement?
Look at us all. We're all smiling. Whenever Elmo.
I can't take it. I can't take it anymore, folks. But there you go. I didn't know. I don't think I've ever heard Elmo before. I didn't know his voice was so antagonizing. All right. Here is now this was I want to get two more clips in here for you. I thought Phil Donahue was great in this clip. I don't know why he's suddenly come back, but he's speaking some common sense here. Check it out.
Here is fake media. And everybody in this room is only trying to do their job.
And President Trump tweeted just moments ago, quote, the Amazon Washington Post, sometimes referred to as the guardian of Amazon not paying internet taxes, parentheses, which they should, is fake news. Well, President Trump, I'd love to see your taxes. Well, you're in luck because I have legendary member of the media with me now, Phil Donahue, the former host of the Phil Donahue Show. Phil, welcome. First, what is your reaction to that exchange that took place in the White House briefing room, a place where one would think respect across the board?
Well, I think people are welcoming finally a pushback. But this is a two-way street. I don't think the press should get in the mosh pit. I think they have to all be big boys, big girls, and take the hits. Take the hits and hope that we have an audience that understands this. And the people who are beating up Trump or the people that are getting beat up by Trump will fall of their own weight. I just think it's a bad thing for the press to get in to the punching game. And by the way, there are a lot of people in the press who can't take a punch. You know, maybe I couldn't either. I don't remember. But, you know, I think it's important for you to be above this and keep doing what you're doing. You're not supposed to be popular. You're supposed to tell people often what they don't want to hear. That's your job. And, of course, the problem is if you're not popular, you don't get promoted in the news game. And somebody else will have to feed your kids. It's a tough dilemma for news.
But how do you do that when the president is really taking a page from the KGB playbook, fake news media? Let me delegitimize the media. And even this idea, the news media. Elite, the liberal elite, most journalists work really hard for not a lot of money. So this idea, these elitists, that's tough to take.
Well, it is. It is. And I think that the best way to handle this is to just keep working. Don't be so sensitive. Don't look like you have a glass jaw.
What does that mean?
That means you go down with it's a boxing phrase. A boxer with a glass jaw is one who can't take a punch, goes down with a left jab instead of a right cross. And I think that the press has to be above that. And all you can do is pray that the people you serve will understand this and appreciate the job that you've got.
How did we get here, though? How did we get to this fake news vortex at a time when there's more media than ever, there is pressure for clicks, and even institutions like the Washington Post and the New York Times are called by the President of the United States the fake news media?
I think this hostility to media began in the White House Correspondents' Dinner, where you two young men, in 2011. It was Seth Meyers was the host, and the joke was, and Donald Trump was in the audience, and the joke was, what is Donald Trump going to run as? And the joke was, oh, I thought he was going to run as a joke. Ha, 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 ha. You took a picture of Donald Trump sitting there, not laughing, in the audience, and all the press surrounding him. Ha, 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 laughing and laughing. I mean, it made me wince because I thought it was a humiliation. One of the worst.
A humiliation of Donald Trump that shouldn't have taken place.
In public. And I think that now he's the man. He's refusing to go to the White House court, and it's like he's peeking window and giving him a middle finger.
When are we focused on the wrong thing, though? I look at this Washington Post story.
Let's take a little break. Take a little break here. And that's exactly what I thought from Donahue is Trump. Love him or hate him, good points, bad points, was an accomplished person. Obama was a flunky who came out of the Democratic machine in Illinois, barely was involved in his state Senate, skipped most of the votes. K- came into the White House under the messianic mantle with many hosannas and much praise, and then just completely, as they say, pooped the bed, and for 8 years worked on destroying America. And this same guy is pointing out what a clown Trump is. And I think that's what lit the fire under him. But I think deeper than that, Trump does care about the country. He's got a vision for it, and he's working on it. And the news media is making a fool of itself. Take a little one last break here. 523-1450, Kelly O'Connell.
Surround your daylight there. Seasons crying, no despair. Navigator lizards in.
All right, so I've got satellite feed breaking in here for some reason, but anyway, that as it may. Let's get to I thought Donahue was good, but there was a really interesting statement by Cheryl Atkinson, and I was fascinated by it. Okay, so you want to be a game player. You're in life, and I was saying to you before a while back, if you go to Washington, you got to know how to play the game, right? There's how it looks on the outside, and then there is how it is on the inside. And most people are mediocre, even at the highest levels, mediocre, right? So the person who was superb at the game was Reagan. Reagan had the highest level of understanding of how the game was played. And when the media tried to blockade him, he took it directly to the people, and it was spectacular. I've never seen anybody do anything like that. So if you want to know about, and I think we've just got about enough time to play this clip with no comedy today, think about this. Well, actually, no, we don't have enough time, but I'm going to put it on the next hour. Atkinson, well-funded actors and manipulating news, trust your cognitive dissonance. What is cognitive dissonance? Okay, cognitive dissonance is when you believe two things. Number one, you're a vegetarian. Number two, you're obsessed over the best steak in town, you know, cognitive dissonance. You are a person who claims to love free speech and you love the truth, and yet you work for CNN. So that's cognitive dissonance. So I think what we're seeing here is, and Atkinson has got a very sophisticated view of how these things work, because she did it from the inside and she got sick of it, and she finally gave up and ended up dropping out and writing a book. She couldn't take the lying anymore and the misleading that was all around her. And so she ended up kind of turning state's evidence against the media, if you want to put it into those terms. And so what we ended up with was a very highly sourced and extremely, extremely, I would say, talented and intelligent lady who's laying it all out. Here's Brian Regan riding on the back of motorcycles, and we're going to have come back with Ben Rossin.
I got to watch out for my health, man. I'm doing stupid things. I took a ride on a motorcycle last week. First time I've ever been. My brother-in-law was like, hey, you want to go for a ride with me on my motorcycle? I didn't want to sound like a wuss, so I was like, yeah. Born to ride. So we get outside. He's got this big, giant motorcycle, and he's, you know, we put the helmets on. He's like, hop on, you know. I'm at the age where I don't really hop that well. You know, my hop is like, okay, hang on. Hang on, getting all hopped on here. So I'm sitting behind him. We haven't left yet. And I don't know how it works. So I put my arms around him. So he's not too happy with that. He gives me one of these. Okay. All right. Okay. You got handles down by your seat there. There's little handles down here. So I'm like, oh, this feels safe. I don't know how strong he thinks my ab muscles are that I can hunker in this position when he takes off at 80 miles an hour. So he takes off. I'm like, whoa! And I use every ounce of gut muscle I got, which ain't a whole lot, to jerk back forward, and our helmets click, click. And he kept perking and jerking. I'm going, click, 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 click. This is fun. Click, click, click. Big giant click-clack heading down the highway. And he starts turning to the right. He goes, we're turning, lean. I thought we were going to tip over. So I leaned to the left. I thought it was like a sailboat. Regular Evel Knievel. Who I saw recently on a talk show. I feel bad for that guy. Every time he does a talk show, they show him the footage where he fell off the motorcycle at Caesar's Palace and bounced around like 83 times. That's what they show him. Hey, do you remember that day, Evel? Oh, no, I don't remember. And they always ask him what he was thinking right before he hit the pavement. What kind of question is that? What were you thinking right before you hit the pavement, Evel? What were you thinking? I remember thinking, hey, did I turn off the iron? Then my leg snapped in half. Then I was thinking, hey, maybe I should get a puppy. What do you think I was thinking? I was thinking, ah! Ah! Something like that, if I remember right.
All right, we'll take a break here. And 523-1450 to call in 805-618 to text. We'll be back with Ben Rawson.
There's not a falling star waiting for the early train. Sorry, boy, but I was hit by purple rain. Oh, come on, Joe, you can always change your name.
Well, I don't know what's going on with the machine here. Is it operator error or does something happen? Usually when stuff like this happens, it is, it's a programming error of some kind. So in any event, I'll hang out with you over the break and get to some of your top stories here in Google News. Walgreens scraps Rite Aid deal and will instead buy 2,200 stores for $5 billion. Cardinal Pell of Australia taking leave to fight sexual abuse charges. There was a guy, you probably heard of this. He and his wife or girlfriend, they had kids together. Of course, doesn't mean they're married these days, but they're trying to get more viewers. And so somebody had the bright idea of getting a pistol and shooting it into a dictionary that he would hold in front of him. So his girlfriend got a 50 caliber pistol, Desert Eagle pistol. And he was holding up some sort of a dictionary and she shot him and it went through it and hit him and killed him. So Trump meeting with South Korean leader to reconfirm the ironclad relationship we have. Poll, almost half of Americans now say immigrants help economy. I don't think that's really the issue, but maybe I'm missing something here. But FBI agent charged with lying about Oregon standoff shooting, which is an interesting story. Staples being bought for $7 billion. Now, do you think they should break up Amazon? Is it too big? I mean, it's giant, so... Chris Paul traded to the Rockets, who are, I guess, a pretty good franchise, not great. And, well, I got 1,000 stories here, so let me just bring up one of them. And so what I found, well, I'm going to play this later for you, but they discovered a skull cult. And I got some clips on that for you, which I'll play for you later. All right, so here's something on Obama that is the question here. If Obama missed an opportunity to kill al-Baghdadi or Baghdadi, whatever his name is. All right, here's another one. I'm going to play this one. Did the FBI, this is interesting, listen to this. Did the FBI pay for Hillary's negative research on Trump? Pretty fascinating thesis from Dick Morris. Check it out. Can you imagine that? Wouldn't that be ironic? Then Comey's way up to his neck.
When Donald Trump got the Republican nomination, Hillary was pretty confident that her ability to attack Trump would quickly bring him down. And at the start, she threw everything but the kitchen sink at Trump. His comments about women, about Miss America, about Rosie O'Donnell, about the handicapped reporter who asked him questions, about everybody she could possibly think of who Trump had been outrageous to. There was a long list. And all of those accusations were hurled at Trump, and they bounced off. The Trump University, the possibility of mob ties, the bankruptcy of the casinos, none of it mattered. It just bounced off him like bullets off a tank. So Hillary began to grow desperate, and she turned to trying to make something of the Russian meddling in the campaign, which she thought happened when they hacked the DNC computers. We're not clear that they did yet, but let's assume that they did. So her supporters hired a group called Fusion GPS, who hired an ex-spy named Christopher Steele from British Spy to dig up dirt and to establish that there was collusion between Trump and Putin to fix the election. And that's been the narrative they've been obsessing on, not only during the election, but during the transition and during the first 6 months of his presidency, and with a special prosecutor being appointed. But when you look at some of the evidence, it looks like the FBI may have actually paid for the development of negative research on Donald Trump during the election, that they may have actually used tax money to pay for Hillary's negative research. We know that the FBI offered this guy, Christopher Steele, $50,000 if he could verify the claims made in his outrageous dossier, and that the offer was made before Election Day. We know that they offered to pay his expenses and probably did during the period before Election Day. Now, we don't know what the full relationship between the FBI and Christopher Steele was. And because we don't know that, we're indebted to a public interest group called Cause of Action, C small o a, which is kind of like Judicial Watch, a conservative group that uses the justice system to get at the truth. And they filed an FOI request, Freedom of Information, with the FBI asking that question. What was the nature of your financial relationship with Christopher Steele? And the FBI wrote back, we can neither confirm nor deny that there was such a relationship or is, and we cannot answer that question without doing serious damage to national security and without compromising our sources and methods of intelligence gathering. Wow. We struck a nerve. Now, what that means is that the FBI cannot confirm or deny, which creates its own probability that it's true, that the FBI was literally paying a group to hire a guy to dig up dirt on a candidate for president in an American election that was still in progress. This is absolutely incredible. Now, we need to press the FBI. Grassley and his committee needs to subpoena the FBI and put them under oath and ask them that question. And if the successor to Comey says, oh, I can't answer that in a public session, well, get it in a private session and then litigate to get it out in public, because this is absolutely outrageous. This could be the FBI using the tactics they used to use in South America when they didn't like a regime. Now, we discuss all of this in our upcoming book, Rogue Spooks, the intelligence war on Donald Trump that exposes this whole thing, comes out in the middle of August. Pre-order a copy now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble's, and if you pre-order now, I'll make sure the book you get is signed. Thanks very much.
All right, so that was Dick Morris. Now, okay, so there was something wrong with the satellite feed. It fired off a little bit early. Possibly, I guess I could have touched the wrong button, but fortunately I didn't get shocked to death. But be that as it may, we do have Ben Rossin here this morning. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Kelly.
How's the baby?
The baby's doing well. You know, for being 3 weeks old, we still think she should sleep longer at night, but she'll get there.
So babies sleep longer as they get older?
Well, no, I just mean that at 3 weeks old, the baby's still needing to eat during the middle of the night. And, of course, mom and dad are ready to sleep a little bit longer.
I gotcha. All right. So, well, that is exciting to have a baby around. Now, is going on with the monument. What was your opinion on what the most recent events were?
Oh, boy. What an interesting meeting on Wednesday or on Tuesday. We had a huge turnout at the county commission chambers. We had two different resolutions that were on the agenda. The first one was one that I put on the agenda that said to support the review that Secretary Zinke was proposing, specifically in regards to private property rights, or private property within the monument. And Kelly, there's 14,980 acres of private land within the 550,000 acre monument. So we're talking about 2.5% of the monument is private land.
But there's a question that's going to come up for a lot of people. Once there's a monument, does the private property get canceled? Is it suddenly owned by the government, or is it just controlled by the monument?
Well, the Antiquities Act calls for the property at some point to be relinquished to the government. And so that's part of the question is, what does that process look like? When is the government taking away these people's property? You know, for some of these people, you know, we had people at the commission meeting that were talking about, oh, it's only 14,000 acres out of 550,000. You're right. It's a very tiny portion of the monument. But for those individuals that own that property, Kelly, that's a huge part of their life.
Well, but you don't want to say that it doesn't matter because it only affects a few people or it's only 2%.
Right.
Because then that wipes out the theory behind the Bill of Rights. Is that it applies to all people at all times.
So I tried to be very careful in drafting the resolution, Kelly. I tried to make sure the resolution was not in opposition to the monument. I needed two other people to come on board with me to get the resolution passed. Unfortunately, the other side went to a lot of deceptive tactics.
Was CNN involved?
Not to my knowledge. But Senator Steinborn was heavily involved with a robocall that he sent out that was full of deceptive information.
Can you pass on what was deceptive about it so in case people heard it?
So what they said is that this resolution would eliminate the monument and drastically reduce the size of the monument. It didn't do that. This resolution did not touch the size at all. Even that 2.5 to 3% of private lands, my resolution did not go so far as to try to remove that from the monument. I tried to keep it very mellow, but that didn't stop the other side from thing and lying about it and saying that, you know, I got one call, Kelly, that said, I forget the exact words that she used. She was very angry. I was a very evil person, and all I wanted to
Wait a minute. She knew you before the meeting.
Yeah, she called me before the meeting. All I wanted to do was bulldoze the Oregon Mountains and put up more crappy houses. And, you know, it's just there's so many things wrong with it. Just it's amazing to
me. Was that during the meeting that she said that?
No, she had a phone call in to me and just berated me over the phone.
Can I have her phone number? I'd like to crank call her. I'm going to call her up and offer her a mobile home in the foothills of the Oregon Mountains and see what she says.
You know, it's really hard, Kelly, because I'm trying to be responsible. We do have private individuals out there. But all of the discussion at the county commission meeting was about how we need to protect the monument. That wasn't even what the resolution was about.
Let me ask you something. I don't believe that there's only support for the monument. But if there was, it would kind of confirm my sense that the people in Doniana have given up. I mean, if everybody supported that monument, it would lead me to the feeling that, to the thought that there's a lot of people here who just have stopped trying.
Kelly, I think that's very true. I think you saw that the Monday before last at the city council chambers when they were having a discussion on the monument, and there were, I believe, three people that spoke up in opposition to what the city council was doing as far as telling President Trump not to do a review, and that was it. At the county commission meeting, we had quite a bit more than that. We had close to 20 people that stood up in support of my resolution, and so that was very encouraging. But yeah, when Kelly, it was disappointing to me that we didn't have a discussion on the resolution. The discussion that was had from the public who were upset at me was they didn't want to change the footprint of the monument. It didn't matter to them that the resolution didn't change the footprint of the monument.
But this is this age that we're living in, and I was reading the seven hallmarks of influencing people with propaganda, and there's a bias. There's all these different cognitive biases, in other words, brain or thinking biases. And one of them says that the first information that you get on a topic will unduly influence your opinion, right or wrong.
I think that's very true, Kelly. And that's why Senator Steinborn resorts to sending out a robocall with lies in it. And I think that's very disappointing for an elected official not to be concerned about what is truth.
But both he and Nathan, please don't call me Tiny Small, are working for the Wilderness Alliance, right?
That's where they get their daily paycheck.
So how do they show up? And this is when I think Jeff and Nathan showed up at the meeting that we had with Steve Pierce that I guess I emceed it or whatever you call it. They showed up after everybody had already came in and kind of bullied their way in, and then, you know, stood up there like they're, you know, fighting for precious freedoms. And I'm thinking, these people are already bought and paid for by the Wilderness Alliance, which is a pretty far left group. I like Jeff, by the way. Jeff Steinborn's a nice guy. I disagree with those tactics. Nathan came on here one time and was called Tiny and decided to never return. But, you know, there should be more to offer the people in leadership that's bought and paid for by the far left. And I say that, you know, Jeff might listen. I know Tiny Smalls doesn't listen, but, you know, why can't we have unbiased leadership?
You know, and have a real discussion on the issues instead of putting up these straw men so that there doesn't have to be a discussion on the issue, because they don't want to talk about private property rights. They'd rather talk about how we shouldn't reduce the footprint of the monument, which, again, my resolution, Kelly, did not reduce the size or suggest changes or ask someone else to reduce the size of the monument. But that fact didn't matter to them. They used that as a scare tactic to get people up, to be upset that I was trying to reduce the size of the monument, which, again, was nowhere in the resolution that I had brought forward.
All right. So do we need to have another town hall or something? I would be more than happy to be involved.
You know, Kelly, I think we're going to have to continue to have these discussions. The challenge will be, is if the other side only wants to, Kelly, they overfilled the commission chambers, so we had to open up a overflow room, which was great. Then they filled up the overflow room, and we had to open up a second overflow room, which again was great. And it would have been wonderful if those people were really talking about the issues instead of talking about or using talking points that had been given that weren't even on the subject. And so I think that's one of
talking points. We should just do a show on propaganda and the propaganda that you've seen in your time in government, mm-hmm. your time in office, and the propaganda that you've had to fight against virtually every meeting that you've been at.
That's right. And Kelly, I think that'd be a really good show.
How do talking points work just for people who've never experienced them?
Well, so what you had with the individuals that got up to speak, everyone kind of had the same words that they were using or the same theme that they were talking about, which was you can't reduce the size of the monument. Even though, Kelly, the resolution that we were considering didn't discuss that at all. So what they did through that process was, instead of debating the issue that I was putting on the table, which was what to do with the private property that's within the monument, they changed the discussion by focusing on something completely different. And they had 60 or 70 people focusing on something that was completely different. And we never did get to talk about those individuals whose entire livelihoods are tied up in private property. This is not leased land. This is not the state land that they're using. There are 14,980 acres of privately owned land inside the monument. And the question is, what can those individuals do with it? And I think that's a very important subject that has to be discussed.
All right. So how can we get the message out there? Here's my problem, and I'm very concerned about this because I see the effects of it all the time. I see nationally people are drawing conclusions about places like CNN and the message they're putting out there, and they're starting to dismiss CNN. But where is the local understanding of being manipulated? If somebody's trying to manipulate you, do they have your best interests in mind?
Certainly not.
Right?
Absolutely.
So if they're using talking points, what does that mean? I'm asking.
You know, Kelly, in this point, it was very clear that Senator Steinborn, Commissioner Billy Garrett, they did not want to discuss the real issue. And so because they did not want to discuss the real issue, they put all these things to distract, to take the attention away from what is a serious issue that needs to be focused on. And it's disappointing that they have so little interest in what is right and in having a discussion about what public policy should be, that all they're interested in doing is being deceptive and getting people to the meeting to talk about something that's not even on the agenda.
Right. Okay. So let's take a little break here. We'll be right back. Can you stay with us for another segment?
Yes.
Just
Kelly, and for the next subject, I want to talk a little bit about the rail study. So just kind of as a little teaser there for people to hang on through the commercial break.
Okay. I'm upset because I see that these kids are getting propagandized, and I feel like it's turning them into sitting ducks. And I understand that everybody wants to back the right thing, but there's no training anywhere for kids to avoid being manipulated. And I just think it's very sad, you know?
Yes, indeed.
All right, we'll take a little break here. Sister Golden Hair, 523-1450-805-6180. You can't get better than America. We'll be right back with Ben Rossin and another outrageous attack against the integrity of this Mesilla Valley community. And I'm not kidding.
Well, I tried to make it Sunday, but I got so damn depressed that I set my sights on Monday, and I got myself undressed. I ain't ready for the altar, but I do agree there's times when a woman sure can be a friend of mine.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Hey, it's Donna.
Donna, what's going on?
I have a question for Ben.
All right. Hold on just a second. Well, we'll be done with the ad in about 10 seconds, okay? Well, folks, we have a call from Donna. Good morning, Donna.
Good morning.
I'm sorry, I didn't have the sound up. How are you doing today?
I'm fine. How are you?
I've never been better. Thank you very much.
Good. I have a question for Ben.
Ben, you're up.
Fire away, Donna.
Are there any rules that can be enforced to keep them from testifying off the subject?
One more time, because the sound meter pegged all the way. I don't know if people were able to hear that. Could you repeat the question?
Sure. If people are not speaking to the issue on the table at the county commission meetings, are there any rules that can be enforced to keep them from testifying off the subject?
Well, Donna, that's a great question, and that's really up to the chairperson of the county commission, in this case, Commissioner Solis, who's in charge of keeping the order and decorum at the meeting. You know, she had an interesting job with that at the first several times she asked for, we normally don't allow applause, and so she said, please don't applause, we're trying to move through the public input. And the reason that you do that, you don't have the applause or you keep the decorum, is to respect the minority that might be there and allow them the opportunity to speak as well. And so after about the third time or fourth time, she said, please don't applause. She said, I'm not sure if you all understand what the word applause means, but that means don't clap. And I thought that was very creative of her, adding a little bit of humor in there to try to do that. But she made the decision to go ahead and allow any public input on the monument, even if it wasn't on the resolutions that were before us. I think that was the wrong decision, but that is her prerogative as the commission chair, so I did not challenge that.
Okay, well, I will decision.
All right, Donna, thank you for calling.
I think it's ridiculous that people applause, are allowed to applause when it favors their agenda.
Goal is you're supposed to be having a discussion or a debate on the subject, and so it's a matter of listening to the debate and a real debate. In the old way that was taking place was a debate of subjects, not of just trying to rally people to applause.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Thank you, Donna. Have a good day. All right. So, I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but we really need to try to teach our kids to think for themselves. That doesn't mean that they would become conservatives.
That's right.
But come to conclusions based on logic and evidence, mm-hmm. In a proper, sequence. If A, then B, if B, then C, A, therefore C. I mean, that's, from before the time of Aristotle and Plato. I mean, we should, it is pathetic that the left has to turn people into robots to get them to agree with their ideas. And we do have another call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, that's the way democracy works. Tough break. They took a vote, and sorry, Ben, you lost, but that's just the way it goes.
Hey,
you know?
Frankie, where was the vote on turning the Oregon Mountain into this colossal, whatever?
What do you mean, where was the vote? I mean, where Ben, put forward a proposal, and nobody liked it. And the rest of the commission, they didn't like it. Everybody applauded, and that's the way it goes. Yay for democracy. God bless America.
God bless America, Frankie. Frankie, thanks for calling in, and that's a perfect segue over to the transit district that I wanted to talk about, because here the voters did take a vote, and they turned down the transit district by over 15%, and yet the Democrat-controlled county commission decided to go ahead and implement the tax increase and the transit district anyway. Now they had a meeting 2 days ago that said even though people aren't riding the buses, 60% of people would ride a train to El Paso. And so they're proposing a $430 million train between here and El Paso, even though the voters have already turned it down, Frankie.
What do you think?
Well, let me say, I disagree with that. But then again, That's what you get with democracy. You know, sometimes it's pretty nasty.
Define democracy anyway.
Well, democracy. We need democracy. It's a Greek word. It comes from the basic Greek word, the makarakabos. You know, come on, Doctor. What do I mean by democracy? If everybody gets a chance to vote in a free society, there's no tyranny stuff. You conservatives with your tyranny and all that.
All right,
but
Frank.
I have to throw that in.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the insult. Anything else?
Well, no, I just wanted. Oh, yeah, just one other thing. You know, a big smile on my face. All the things are going wrong with your boy, the Trumper guy, and everything. The BCRA is going down the tubes. You guys are really in a jam. I got to laugh. I hope you don't mind.
I don't mind, but I mean, you know, the Trumper, as you call him, the Trumpster, has the upper hand. Your heroic friends at CNN are going down in flames.
Oh, give it up, Kelly. One stupid little story from CNN compared to all the ash and trash coming out of you and foul noise drug work. Give it up.
All right.
Ay, ay, ay.
Frankie, thank you for your learned comments and have a
You're
lovely day.
You're quite welcome. We'll see you then. Take care. You rock, baby.
Thanks, Frankie.
All right, folks. Go get some medicine.
So, you know, Kelly, the second subject I really wanted to talk about today was that proposed rail study or proposed rail line. So the South Central Regional Transit District partnered with a Chicago-based group to do a study on whether or not a train was needed between Las Cruces and El Paso. So the Chicago group came in and they've decided that we definitely need a train and people will ride it on a daily basis.
Oh, fantastic. We have another call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
This is David.
Good morning, David. Hope you're well. Thanks for the call. What's on your mind?
Doing really well. How are you? How are you guys?
Never.
Well, first of
never
all,
been better.
First of all, the people that are going to study whether people are going to ride a train, aren't they from Illinois and Chicago? And isn't Illinois and Chicago a absolute disaster right now as far as their finances go? From listening to fools like this guy that's trying to make us believe that we can commute back and forth to El Paso easier than if we just drive our own car.
Sounds reasonable.
You know, they've got, David, they've got planned stops in Las Cruces, Mesilla Park, Barino, Vado, Anthony, Cañatillo, Sunland Park, and El Paso. And they think that there will be over 7,000 people that would ride that train every single day. Even though on the buses that we have dismal ridership.
Well, right now, I mean, no one rides the bus, and you know, they're talking about these little stops.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you might have two or three people at each one of these little communities ride the bus, so
right.
Maybe they misprinted, and maybe they meant 7 riders per day or something.
I think that's more realistic. But, you know, David, even at the 7,000 riders a day that they're estimating, that means the cost for each passenger would be $19, and their goal is to charge each passenger $3. So the additional $16 cost would be on the taxpayers' back.
Sounds fair.
You know, yeah, no, it's awesome. I mean, look at the boondoggle train we have up north. Why don't they take a look at that and see how many millions or hundreds of millions of dollars that's losing each year? And we're talking, you know, and we're talking people riding to the state capital. You're definitely going to have more people riding from commuting to a state capital than you are from Cruces to El Paso. And then we got the boondoggle out here in the desert. It's just these people just continue to chase boondoggles and want the poorest people in one of the poorest states and one of the poorest counties to keep paying for it. It's ridiculous. It's unbelievable.
It sure is.
I wish Frankie would just ante up and start paying for some of this stuff instead of listening to his fake news network all the time and being enamored with it.
Well, you know, this bus system this train system would only cost $430 million. So if Frankie's still listening, we'd be grateful for that donation.
Thanks a lot, David.
I think it'd be awesome.
Have a good day. All right. Are you done?
Kelly, I think on that note, I'm going to leave and see you next week. But I sure do appreciate those individuals that showed up at the county commission meeting and those people who are contacting their county commissioner. We're going to have another big fight on the transit district in 2 weeks. And so we'll talk about that some more next week, Kelly.
Fantastic. Thanks for sponsoring the show.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Folks, we'll be right back. Local news. Okay, so we're talking about earlier the cognitive bias that causes people to favor the information they got first. Okay, so you're interested in a topic, you go on to Amazon, you look it up, you find a book, and you look at the reviews and everything, and you decide to get a book that costs a penny because it's got pretty good reviews and it's cheaper than all the rest. That book will have more influence on your thinking on the topic than anything else you probably ever run into. So that's called anchoring or focalism bias, the tendency to rely too heavily or anchor on one trait or piece of information when making decisions, usually the first piece of information acquired on that subject. So you see all of these people who are, ready to die in this battle over political theory, and they have so much love for socialism. Why? Because it was seeded into their DNA, into their bones, through college. Many of them would have lost their faith and picked up a new faith. Now, are they going to go back and challenge that early experience? No, why not? Because it's like falling in love. If you fall in love with somebody, you don't want another person to come along and tell you what a piece of crap they are. All right, here is Cheryl Atkinson. Well-funded actors manipulating news. Trust your cognitive dissonance. We all need to become better at hearing information and sifting through it. And the best thing you can do probably, get a book on fallacies. If you read fallacies, if you have any interest in thinking whatsoever, you'll be thrilled. And you'll suddenly see all of these fallacies out there, and it'll help you. It'll help you find bad information, bad ideas. All right, here's Atkinson.
Just written a new book on the influence of media and political lobbies. Cheryl Atkinson is author of The Smear, How Shady Political Operatives and Fake News Control What You See, What You Think, and How You Vote. Also the host of Sinclair's Sunday TV news show, Full Measure. Good to see you today.
Thanks for having me.
This is such a fascinating topic right now. I don't know if you saw more of that briefing yesterday, but there was one local newspaper editor who stood up and really got into it with Sarah, and he seemed personally outraged about not having more access, about them not answering questions the way he wants them answered. He took it as a personal affront, it seemed. And really wore her out.
I think that in general, the journalists who have decided to take a stand against this president and have announced in some instances that they're suspending the normal rules and procedures of journalism because they think this president is such a threat, in many instances, they really believe that. They are committed, in some cases partisans, but just committed people who think they're doing the right thing. So I think you're going to get that sort of feeling from them. They're also being cheered on by the people around them, almost like a feeding frenzy with sharks. The people surrounding them are patting them on the back and saying good job.
Do you think we're getting to a situation in quote journalism where the ends justifies the means, that these people, as you said, may genuinely view this president as some kind of threat to them, to the country, that yeah, the rules have changed?
Yes, and I think there's a fine line because we want to critically and carefully cover our institutions and powerful politicians. Absolutely, they should be questioned. But when you do it in such a way that the public no longer believes what they're getting is the whole truth or sometimes the truth at all, you've undercut yourself because we're getting to an era where people hardly believe anything they hear at first blush. At least that's how I am. No matter who reports it, I feel like I have to do my own independent work to know whether it's true or not because there have been so many serious mistakes, even by formerly very well-respected news outlets.
Mm-hmm. And we've seen as much when Jim Comey, former FBI director, testified on the Hill that there were many times stories in mainstream publications were wrong, but it wasn't his job to go out correcting them. He couldn't do it, but he said they were blatantly wrong when they were, quote, based on leaks and those kinds of things. Okay, so the president tweeting out, as he has many times about this issue, the failing at New York Times writes false story after false story about me. They don't even call to verify the facts of a story, a fake news joke. Well, Glenn Thrush replied to that and said, call your office, sir. The New York Times spoke to three members of your staff yesterday and ran everything by your team. It's clear he's very frustrated.
Well, Glenn may be telling the truth about that. But we also know that Glenn Thrush was hired by the New York Times after emails revealed he called himself a hack in dealing with Democratic operatives and helping push the Democrats' message and having what I call in the book transactional journalism, which I think is wholly inappropriate in many cases, the dealings that some journalists are having behind the scenes with political actors. Then he gets, instead of roundly criticized, he gets a promotion by going to work for the New York Times and being allowed to cover President Trump. So again, what he says comes with a grain of salt, I think, once journalists have made their positions known and have engaged in this type of behavior.
What else from your book do you want people to know about how they may be manipulated? I mean, they may be good people who believe, whether they're on the right or the left, the material that they're reading, but it may not be accurate.
I think if you listen to the players I interviewed in this book who operate in that smear universe, they themselves will tell you, I mean, this is kind of scary when you think about it, virtually every image you run across, whether it's in the news or on social media or elsewhere, even on comedy shows, is being put there, they say, for a purpose by somebody who wants you to think something that may not necessarily be a consensus at all or may not even be true. And there are well-funded actors that use fake accounts on social media or powers of persuasion and a ton of money to try to manipulate what you think. So when you see these common narratives circulating on news outlet after news outlet and social media that everybody thinks this or that, and you're thinking, really? Because I don't think that. Trust your cognitive dissonance. I think that, try to be aware that you're being manipulated, or at least someone may be trying.
Well, and best advice for people who aren't sure, because there are times I see things and think, is this an onion? I mean, I really do think it's this satirical, and I have to go check it out for myself. That happens almost every week.
Me too. And, I hate to say it, because the news, we're supposed to be the ones that people that sort through the mess so they know what to believe. And instead, I'm telling people who has time for this, that you have to do a lot of your own original research now, maybe watching the whole hearing on C-SPAN or finding the press conference and seeing it from beginning to end to see if the context was correct. Again, we're supposed to be doing that for them, but we're in a time right now, I hope it's temporary, where people are not trusting or feeling that they're able to trust what we interpret.
All right, a fascinating new book, a good read for all of us. Cheryl, thanks for coming on today. Good to see you.
All right, folks, take a little break here and got your weather for you. 523-1450 and 805-6180.
Will you make me?
All right, so looking through the various stories we have out there for you, 523-1450, if you got something on your mind, what do you think is going to happen with the Oregon Mountain situation? It's kind of interesting, isn't it? All right, I told you I was going to play something for you about the Skull Cult. And I have that right here for you. And there was an article in National Geographic about this. And so I searched around and found a little clip from Science Magazine to accompany it. You check it out.
Researchers have uncovered evidence of a Neolithic skull cult at an important archaeological site in southeastern Turkey. They found skull fragments with unique markings buried among the earliest known examples of monumental buildings, sometimes called the world's first temples. Since there were markings on fragments from three different skulls, and they were found in the context of the Göbekli Tepe site, for which a clear ritual component is proposed, researchers believe that these fragments could be evidence of the presence of a skull cult. A skull cult means people were modifying, decorating, and displaying skulls in a ritual context. Other decorated skulls have been found at other Neolithic sites in the Middle East, but this is the first such find at Göbekli Tepe. Here, the bodies were buried, the skulls occasionally exhumed and stripped of any remaining flesh. Subsequently, skulls could be decorated with paint or facial features remodeled in clay. Analysis of the new fragments revealed cut marks in the skulls left over from the defleshing process, as well as deep grooves made with flint tools and puncture holes, These incisions and holes are a type of skull modification that hasn't been seen before in this region. It suggests that the skulls were strung up as decoration. It's too soon to tell whether these skulls were marked as a way to honor ancestors or punish fallen enemies. Researchers will be back this fall to look for more clues to the rituals, more skulls, and the missing skeletons.
All right, so there was something else that the ancient people used to do, which was they had obviously a fixation on skulls because they also did cranial modification, and they did it all around the world. Now, here is just a little clip on that. I thought you might find a kind of connected story interesting. The truth behind artificial cranial modification. And let's start that right here. Truth behind cranial modification artificially. The elongation of skulls.
When we think of body modification, we typically think of things like tattoos and piercings. But there exists another ancient and widespread practice that relatively recently has seen a sharp decline. That's the practice of artificial cranial modification. This practice involves the intentional reshaping of an infant's skull in order to elongate or widen the cranium. But what may be surprising is just how many cultures around the world have practiced cranial modification as an integral part of their society. Most people are probably familiar with the elongated skulls of South America, but archaeologists have found intentionally modified crania everywhere from North America and Africa to Eastern Europe and Asia to Hawaii and Australia. This was a very common practice. The earliest evidence we have for artificially modified crania comes from two Neanderthal skulls found in the Shanabar Cave in what is now Iraq. So we know that pretty much everyone but Western Europeans intentionally modified their heads. But why did they do it? What sort of motivations would lead cultures to keep this as a practice for generations? Well, it turns out that these motivations aren't much different than why you or I might go to get a tattoo. And it starts with pure aesthetics and beauty. Some of the most well-known head modifiers are the Mongbetu in Central
Africa. Kelly!
They use tight head wrappings around the skulls of infants to form an elongated shape.
Hold on, let me put you on hold, okay? I'll be right back.
They express their admiration for the elongated skull through their numerous pieces of art. The women also wear a circular headdress hairstyle, which emphasizes the aesthetics of the cranium. Though it has largely faded in the last century, it can still be clearly observed in the elderly individuals. Another group famous for modifying their crania are the Mayans. The Mayans practice two different forms of head shaping, one with the back of the skull standing straight up, and one with the front of the skull pushed back and elongated. Around the time of the Spanish conquests in the 16th century, a conversation was recorded between a Spanish missionary and a native Mayan. The missionary asked why the Mayans' heads looked so different, and the man responded by saying, "This is done because our ancestors were told by the gods that if our heads were thus formed, we would appear noble and handsome and better able to bear burdens."
Ooh. Guess we better make that part of Obamacare. Anyway, we've got a call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Good morning, Kelly.
Oh, hey, Takashi. What's going on? How you doing?
I just wanted to throw a tidbit on that skull modification. The Arawak Indians right there originated from the island of Jamaica. They used to tie boards on the front of their skulls to make it flat in the front, as that used to be some kind of a mark for their tribe.
They
recognize each other.
Okay.
Yeah, you used to have different kinds of Indians that occupied the Caribbean, but the Arawaks in particular, they used to tie boards on their babies' foreheads to make the forehead really flat.
Therefore,
so I think that practice has been around quite some time.
Therefore, from the phrase, "I feel bored." Being bored, being bored originally was having
because I was under the understanding
flat,
that these scientists
pushed on your head to make your head flat. I'm sorry,
presented. It seemed like they discovered
for God's
something
sakes,
new
let
or
me interrupt
something.
You. All right, Takashi, anything else?
No, Kelly. That's
Thank
it.
You. Thank you. Have a good day. All right. Okay, so, all right, we've got one last break here. We'll be right back. 523-1450. All right, a little Brian Regan for you here. Hotels.
But if a company makes a mistake, they're not going to admit it anyway. And I know this from years of checking into hotels. If there's ever a mistake with the reservation, it's not their fault. It's always the customer who apparently has made some type of mistake in the process. How you doing? Been traveling. Have a reservation. Confirmed it 6 times. reservation under Regan. Did you by chance make the reservation under another name? And why would I have done that? Why would anyone do that, sir? Has anyone ever done that in the history of making hotel reservations? You don't think it's insulting that you're suggesting when name came up, that's where I went off the rails? Is that what you're tossing into the air here? Somebody on your side said name, and I panicked. I don't know. Just figure it out when we get to our guest. Is that your hypothesis? So I know this is their technique. They'll never own it. They'll always ping-pong it back over the desk. So I have my reply I like to go into. Did you by chance make the reservation under another name? Check zippity-doo-dah. Sometimes I think my name is Zippity Doodah and I mistakenly make my hotel reservation under that. Try Zippity Doodah. Put that into the computer, please. Zippity Doodah. Yeah, like the song. Doodah, the last name. Zippity, first name. You don't have that? Try Zip as the first name, Itty as the middle name. Sometimes I think that's my name and I mistakenly make my hotel reservation. Try Zip Itty Doodah. Put that into the computer. No, I know there's people waiting, but this is your idea and I like it. Let's take it to the end. Zippity, Zippity. You don't have Zippity. Huh. Try Yippee-I-Yo-Ki-Yay. Sometimes I think my name is Yippee-I-Yo-Ki-Yay, and I mistakenly make my hotel reservation. Try Yippee-I-Yo-Ki-Yay. Put Yippee-I-Yo-Ki-Yay into the computer there. Ki-Yay with a K. Try with a C. Try with a K-H. Try with a C-H. Try with a W for some odd reason. Try Yippee-I-Yo-Ki-Yay. Yip is the first name. E-I-O, three middle initials. Try Yippee-I-Yo-Ki-Yay. Try all caps. Try Yippee-I-Yo-Ki-Yay. Try Yippee-I-Yo-Ki-Yay. And then somehow magically a room becomes available.
All right, nice hanging out with you today. Friday, don't forget, open topic Friday. Whatever you want to get into, 5, 2, 3, 4.